listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.
Have you ever thought you've lived before? Perhaps you know you lived before. Do children choose their parents? How likely is it that souls really do reincarnate? And if they do, how do we know? My guest today on Full Power Living is Dr. Elizabeth Carman, author of Cosmic Cradle, which is a book that reports on what we know about the spiritual dimensions of life before birth. Welcome to Full Power Living.
Thank you so much. I'm sorry to jump in on you there.
Oh, that's fine. I'm going to give a little introduction about you, Elizabeth, and welcome to the show, Elizabeth. You're a pre-birth awareness educator and a former community service person who's worked with low-income families, adoption, and foster care, with a BA in psychology, a master's in interdisciplinary studies, and an honorary PhD for your pre-birth research published in an initial book. And that is Cosmic Cradle, Souls Waiting in the Wings for Birth, which came out in 2000. So you spent more than 40 years, I think now on your site it says 45 years, researching consciousness, including long-term inner development courses in North America, Europe, and Asia. And you've also taught meditation workshops and served on university faculty. So, Elizabeth Carman, I am just delighted to welcome you to Full Power Living.
Well, thank you so much, and I hope that I have something meaningful to share to your listeners today.
Well, I know you've collected an amazing amount of information in your book, Cosmic Cradle, and as I understand the intent, you want to show readers that life before birth exists, that it's supported worldwide by cultural beliefs, religions, literature, and research. And my first question is, why is it important to you that people realize that life before birth occurs?
Well, we want to go beyond this understanding or this belief, this false belief that we are just some biological accident that has learned how to think. We are more than this flesh and blood body. And once we can transcend that understanding and get information about that, we will be inspired. We hope through our work that we will inspire people to explore that hidden aspect of themselves, those inner levels of themselves, where there's deeper bliss, deeper creativity through meditation or yoga or whatever path they want to follow. My personal path has been a meditation path for 45 years or more. I'm not counting anymore, but there is deep bliss within us. In Christianity, we have the dictum, the kingdom of heaven is within you. Seek the kingdom of heaven within you. The ancient Greek says, know thyself and you will know the universe and the gods. What are they talking about? They're not talking about this little flesh and bone body that, you know, is either male or female, or is this old, or this particular nationality. They're talking about that hidden aspect of who we are. And so I feel I've got this fun job of finding out about this hidden side of ourselves through this particular direction of people who are born with pre-birth memory. They remember being born, being in the womb, being conceived by their parents, and they remember beyond that. They remember before they identified with any physical body, when they were a state of pure consciousness, pure soul, who they really are. So this is the message, the deeper message, to go beyond our limitations, because that keeps us in suffering and problems. The answers are on a deeper level.
Sounds like it's not going to be a hidden aspect of our lives if you have anything to do with it. So that's good. All right. Well, I found this quote, which speaks to what you just said, from you. The materialistic worldview insults our intelligence. And you You said that right before you shared the four principles of the pre-birth paradigm. And I want to ask you to talk about it, but first I'll read those four principles. One is that individuals with expanded awareness recall life before birth, and that you just spoke to. And two is consciousness and memory go beyond the brain. Three is sensitive parents are aware of souls seeking birth. And four is our life plan is designed prior to birth. So we already looked at one, unless you have more you want to say about that. Can we look at those as a way of opening up this topic a little bit more so that our, I think you said that it's important to have the understanding of these four principles before you really get exposed to pre-birth ideas.
Well, another thing I want to emphasize about the first point is individuals with expanded awareness recall life before birth. Not everyone, you know, if you ask most people, you know, what happened to you before you were born, they don't remember that, and they don't even believe it's possible. They think, well, how could I remember that? I don't even have a brain yet. Don't I need a brain to be conscious, to have a thought, to think? And even if they do have a memory, some flash of a memory, in our Western society particularly, this is a taboo subject, and people will feel hesitant to speak about it. They don't want to be ridiculed or labeled a kook. So the first point we're making here is that these people that we have been researching have an expanded awareness. And in Buddhism, they talk about different levels of remembering the incarnation process. Some people don't remember anything, and some people remember everything, and then there's degrees in the middle. So we're talking about kind of a very special group of people here. So we want to emphasize that these, you know, not everybody has these memories, and just like there's geniuses who, you know, have invented wonderful things in science, or we have great artists and musicians today, there's people who have these innate talents and consciousness, and they are born with this greater memory. And we are looking at people who have these natural memories. They are born with them. They weren't hypnotized nor had a psychic tune into it. So that's one thing there. And then the second point, consciousness and memory go beyond the brain. And even in the area of, you know, hardcore technology today in the medical field, we are finding support for this, that at very young, early ages in the womb, the baby is already sensitive. It's already displaying consciousness, and they're seeing that through our modern technology when the mother goes in for an ultrasound, for example, and or an amniocentesis, where they're putting a needle in to extract some amniotic fluid to do a special test, and they're finding that the baby in the womb, who's at a level of development where its eyes are sealed shut, and a needle is coming into its personal territory, and it bats the needle. It pushes against it, out. And when parents see this on the ultrasound screen, oh my gosh, my baby is a conscious being. And there are many parents are kind of freaked out, that because we don't assume that there's, you know, there's a misunderstanding of a myth about who we really are, even in the womb, that we're not capable of that. So consciousness and memory go beyond the brain. That's very evident more and more. There's certainly a cultural lag in how long this is taking to get out there. Dr. Verney wrote about this in the early 80s, The Secret Life of the Unborn Child, and documented so many reports of mothers who had experiences of babies being fully conscious in the womb, as well as reports I'm telling you about things they're seeing in the laboratories or in the clinical settings.
You know, I have a friend, Elizabeth, Sonia Rechnitzer, who co-wrote a book with her unborn child, Oliver.
Oh, what was the name of that book?
On the break, I have a copy of it nearby.
Yeah, that
and
sounds like
and
something I may have written. Is she European?
She's from Australia.
Okay.
And they co-wrote it, and Oliver largely gave her a lot of suggestions on how to conduct herself through the pregnancy and how important the connection with his father was to him and so forth.
That's beautiful, because this is another aspect of it. When does parenting start? People think, well, parenting starts, you know, the moment the baby takes its first breath and I have a newborn baby in my arms. No, well, that's at least 9 months too late because the baby is capable of telepathic communication while it's in the womb, and we can receive messages if we're sensitive enough, and some women have, as you're describing Sonia's experience, but we can also initiate that from our side and express a lot of love and welcoming and positivity to the baby. We can start connecting and having a bond with that baby, and this is significant, giving respect for what its consciousness really is.
Let me insert here too, I gave birth to two children, and the first one, I was exercising and I wore a red leotard. And when I got pregnant with the second one, I put that red leotard on and I was nothing but uncomfortable the whole time I was wearing it. And I finally realized that the baby was not comfortable with that color. So I went and bought a blue leotard, and no more discomfort. And when he was born, his godmother, who was a medium, said to me, you know, he really doesn't like orange and reds. So it's kind of primitive compared to what you've gotten in your book, but I just would like to bring out that sometimes those are also messages. Like you said, they're things that our babies are trying to communicate to us.
When you're pregnant, it's like two souls in one body.
Mm-hmm.
And that incarnating soul has its preferences. And so the preference of the color, or we have, you know, mothers who have had changed their preferences for different smells, like essential oils. They were particularly drawn to a certain scent, and now they don't like it anymore when they're pregnant. And it's because the baby in the womb doesn't like that scent, or they want to eat certain foods. That's a common experience, these children. There's a lot of information out there, especially in the East, Tibetan Buddhism and Hinduism, talking about how the baby in the womb at a certain point will start reliving and remembering its past life and kind of doing a review of it, and then kind of almost lamenting, oh no, not again. And so there's even messages that come through like that, that they're remembering these, and mothers have dreams about their child in a past life, or there's all kinds of variations of that. They see the movies, some of them call them home movies, of what their child's past life was in their own dreams when they're pregnant with them.
I know that when my son got a little older, he may have been like 6 or 7, I became aware of a past life that I had shared with him, in which he and I were friends and we got on opposite sides in wartime.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a contract with him to help him out, and he was tortured to death, and I was unable to get to him. This was the scenario that I saw. And I talked to my son, and he's 6, 7, 8 years old, not very old, and I just said, you know, I remembered this time when you and I were together, when we were on opposite sides in a war, and I just want you to know I tried to get to you. And I didn't give him any more information than that, and he immediately became angry and said, where were you? You promised.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah. It's really fascinating what these young ones remember. And at some stage, maybe when they're 6 or 7, it seems like there's so much social conditioning not to talk about these things, or they become kind of more overwhelmed by the experiences of this current incarnation, that these memories slip away, fade away. They may come back again at some point, but we see that there is this pattern where the memories are more active in the early part of life, and then they fade out. But we do interview people who as adults remember these memories. It can continue, but there's more of them that remember at a younger age, and then it fades out.
So then The last one, that we have a life plan that's designed prior to birth. I don't think we've looked at that one. What do you have to say about that?
Well, Shakespeare told us all the world's a stage, and we're just simply players, actors on this stage. And that might sound very poetic, but what we're finding in our research is that actually it's almost like that we have individuals who are born with memories of planning their stage life, so to speak, planning, laying out a movie, laying out a script, deciding who's going to be in my movie with me and will I be in a comedy or in a drama or what will I accomplish in that life. So yes, we have people who remember like a pre-life conference, a pre-planning, which they may have done with some guides, some angels, some higher beings, had a consultation, a powwow with them, deciding what do you want to accomplish in your next life. And so it is kind of like that, kind of as what Shakespeare had talked about. I'm not sure if that's really what he was explaining, but it certainly makes sense to us that we are just players here on this earthly plane who sometimes maybe we take it too seriously, but we are here as spiritual beings having a human experience temporarily. We are truly more than what we see with our physical senses.
Mm-hmm. Now, one other thing that I find fascinating, I didn't know much about this, but I was told, for example, that my daughter had been my father in a previous life, and I was warned that she might try to be authoritative over me, which she certainly did, you know. And I think a lot of people aren't aware of the fact that we trade positions. Sometimes we may be a child, and we travel in soul groups. Will you talk about that a bit?
Yes. Oftentimes we're with the same, we have connections with other souls, and we tend to repeat lifetimes together. And as you're describing, sometimes the roles switch. They get reversed. One time you might be the mother, and the next time you might be the child. It's not always going to be the same thing. You're going to experience the relationship from different angles, different viewpoints, to learn different lessons. And so it's interesting that your daughter had that authoritative personality with you, because it was kind of a carryover of what it had been in the previous life. And now she had to learn that, no, Mama's going to be the boss. So I don't know how that all turned out. But anyway, it's something that we don't totally focus on, this past life part of it, all these different memories that people have. I can't give you a lot. If you're thinking of a particular story in our book that relates to that, it's not coming up for me right now, anyone who has that kind of memory, because we're not reincarnation researchers per se, but mm-hmm. we are pre-birth researchers, so we're looking at that spiritual state between lives if we believe in reincarnation. Now, of course, some folks that we have interviewed not only remember that pre-birth state, that spiritual existence and having no connection to any physical body, but they remember, oh, I remember dying in the life before that. And then I remember the pre-birth state before that life. And then, so we have one person in our book, Beverly, who remembers a whole series of lifetimes in the interlife planning in between those lives. And so that's been our focus, to look at the spiritual state, but if it has a connection. And in this case, this woman took us all the way back. I said, how far back does your memory go? She said, I remember coming from the All That Is. I said, wow, what was that all about? She said,
wow.
I remember being spat out, pushed out as a projectile of light, and I was like screaming through the universe. And it was like stars whizzing by, but she said there was no movement. There was no up, no down, no right, no left. It was just pure energy. I didn't know where I was going, but I just felt comfort and ease, and like someone getting ready to go on a big pilgrimage or a special vacation they've been planning for years, and now they're off headed for that special event. And so this is kind of what Beverly described it as, and she had so many memories that we created a whole chapter on what she had to share with us, because she remembered those inner life, that spiritual state between a whole series of lifetimes, and why she chose certain lifetimes and what she was learning each time, and then going back to that original experience where she said she saw all of her costumes. She called them costumes, as I mentioned before. All the world's a stage, and we're merely actors here. So does that answer your question? Or
well, it's a start. You know, it's such a, yes, it does, and it's a start because there's so much material. There's so much to be dealt with and to look at, you know. So thank you. But let me just refer people back to your book, Cosmic Cradle, because you have story after story. You have that wonderful sequence with Beverly, which I read on the plane yesterday as I was coming across country. Fun place to read it. And, you know, so get your own copy of Cosmic Cradle and read all the stories. And thank you, Elizabeth.
Well, you're welcome.
So now we've looked at, we can participate. I'm looking at some of the pre-birth researcher Elizabeth Hallett has some ideas that we need to accept as possible or true. Let's talk for a minute about, we've already covered so much of this about announcing our arrival and making our presence known during pregnancy. Let's see. Oh, gosh, you've covered a lot here. I have all these questions, and I think you've covered most of them.
Well, then I'm doing a good job.
You are. So what, I mean, I know this is just a drop in the bucket question, but what actual evidence do we have that we're souls and that we exist even before we're conceived? Now, you have a report like you just talked about with Beverly, but other evidence do we have?
Well, the strongest evidence we can come up with, because we're talking about something beyond this physical world, the strongest evidence comes from people that have memories that can be validated somehow by their parents. And I can give you a couple of examples.
Okay.
Do you remember the chapter on Elizabeth, a toddler who told her mother, "Mommy, I was in your tummy twice."
Twice, yes.
Wow. This is a two-year-old.
Oh.
First, I was washed down the drain. The second time, I came out like a zipper. Well, her mother realized immediately, oh my gosh, my daughter is talking about the miscarriage that I had in my first pregnancy before she was born. How does she know such a thing as this? I've never talked to her about that. Where does she come up with this idea? And so as the child got older and had more vocabulary, she explained, "Mommy, I was a boy, and I came back as a girl." Oh, my goodness. The
mm-hmm.
mother, then she started to figure it all out, and as the child started revealing more and more of her memories, the child actually remembered an argument that had happened between the mother, Leslie, and the father. And this is in the early stage of the pregnancy, and they were discussing, well, if we have a boy, the father says, we're going to circumcise that boy.
All right.
And the mother says, what?
No.
She understood the sensitivity of a newborn, the awareness of a newborn. She said, I don't want to create trauma in my little baby once it's, you know, as soon as it's taken its first breath. Are you crazy? They had a horrific argument. There was no resolution of it. It was something that the baby in the womb was aware of. The incarnating soul's presence was aware that there was a conflict rising here between these parents whom she had chosen. She wanted to be born to this particular set of parents. They were her number one choice. They were the ones who were going to, she was going to learn the greatest lessons. And when this argument happened, she thought, she realized, this marriage isn't going to make it. They're not going to stay together because the mother wasn't going to let circumcision, and the father, you know, they were going to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So she, this particular being, triggered her own miscarriage. And the next morning after that argument, the mother's shampooing in the shower, washing her hair, and she feels a blob fall down, and looks and sees this white blob go down the shower drain and says, oh my God, that's the baby. And she was right. She went to the doctor and confirmed she had had a miscarriage. Now, from the other side, the child, the incarnating spirit, the little girl, as I'm interviewing her today, she's 30 years old and she recalls this whole thing. She says, I remember looking up and seeing mom washing her hair, and I was falling out of her body and going down into the drain and disappeared into nothingness. And then she was given an option. She said she met with a formless form, that's all she could describe it, and had a conversation, a dialogue. What do I do next? What are my choices? What are my options here? Should I come back to this couple at a later time, or do I have other choices? And she was given a set of choices. She had five different couples she could be born to, including this one. And she said, this was my A++. The other ones, she wouldn't give them the time of the day. She wanted to come back to this particular couple. And so she made that decision very quickly. The mother became pregnant a year or so later, and this time, this particular child, as she said, I came back. I was a boy, and I came back as a girl. And so she came back as Elizabeth, and she remembers this. So she remembers that early stage of the pregnancy where there's really not much neurological substance there to create to be a brain to remember all this. She was remembering all this from the soul level. I mean, that's one way we can kind of answer your question. How can we prove anything like this? But she remembers that. Her mother didn't tell her that, and there's verification on many different levels. People can read it. It's a whole chapter. It's actually a free download on our website. People, cosmiccradle.com, can download it as a PDF and read this beautiful story.
Thank you for that. We've actually overshot for our break time. This was so fascinating for me. Also, on one of our chats, we have a question of what if a soul comes and they remember their previous their life before birth, and yet the family that they come into refuses to accept it and squashes it. What can someone who cares about such a soul do? And I want to go into that when we come back from our break. All right?
Wonderful. Wonderful.
All right. You're listening to Full Power Living, and I'm talking with Elizabeth Carman about the Cosmic Cradle. We'll be right back. Difficult is it for you to ask directly for what you really want, to take responsibility graciously and willingly for your mistakes, or to relate with others because it's fun instead of because you need something from them? Most people believe manipulation and codependence are normal behaviors for adults. They may be common, but they're not normal. Manipulative behaviors really are designed to be part of childhood, to be put away as things of the past when we become adults. So, if you're ready to let manipulation and codependence be part of your past, then get the mini course I've created for you,
Ending Codependence, The Bottom Line. I'm Eileen Dillon, the Emotional Pro, offering you a formula that you can follow for creating healthy, manipulation-free, and lasting intimate relationships. I also give you the tools and principles that you can use to develop lasting immunity to codependence. Get Ending Codependence today at www.emotionalpro.com. That's emotionalpro.com.
All right, welcome back to Full Power Living. I have a few announcements. Next week on Full Power Living, I'm talking with Carla McLaren, a remarkable woman who encourages us to make friends with our emotion and gives us really good reasons for why we want to do that. And I can say, as the emotional pro, I'm really enjoying reading her thoughts and acquainting myself with emotions in the way that she approaches them, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it too. So that's next Thursday, June 18th at 9 a.m. Pacific time or noon Eastern for my discussion with Carla McLaren on the language of emotions. Also, please register at emotionalpro.com, emotionalpro.com, to receive our twice weekly newsletter through which we keep you up to date on the shows and topics we have for you here on Full Power Living. And while you're there, click on the CCFL Global Academy logo to find out what it is that I'm doing to help families and children smoothly go through this transformation that is currently in progress on our earth. So that's at emotionalpro.com. Today, I'm talking with Elizabeth Carman, who's the author of a highly informative book, Cosmic Cradle, about the spiritual dimensions of life before birth. As I was saying before the break, Elizabeth, we have an issue that was brought up on the chat, which is of a boy who remembers life pre-birth, but has come into a family where this is being squashed, and he's being guided, and the parents are insisting that he come fully into the material world and get involved in sports and so forth. And people around him, other people in the family, would like to support him in keeping contact with those memories, but they're not being allowed to. Can you talk about situations like this? I'm sure you've encountered them before.
Well, that's difficult, because if you're not the parent and then you want to help this child who's got parents that are skeptical or resistant, you're interfering with the way they want to raise their child. But if there's any way you can share evidence, such as what we found here in our research, with the parents to open them up to it, because these children are so precious. They're just so innocent and want to share. It's nothing they're fantasizing. They're very innocent about this. And so when a child shares these memories, the things that are indicator signs that these are real, and this could be emphasized to the parents when a child is speaking like this about things beyond his experience. For example, I made the example earlier of Elizabeth, who remembered the miscarriage. I was washed down the drain. That's beyond her experience. No one had told her about that miscarriage. So sometimes these children are talking about things beyond the range of their experience, and they're consistently talking about them. That's another indicator that they aren't fantasizing. And also a matter-of-fact tone. Sometimes they'll sound like an adult, and they'll just say something, "Mommy, I chose you to be my mommy, and I just know this." And they say it way beyond their years. It's shocking to the parents. Yes, this is an area where we need more education to the general public, so that these more and more of these children are coming in. More and more, we could say, higher beings, more advanced souls are coming into the earth plane. I think we're having a big shift of consciousness here. So this is going to become more and more commonplace, that the parents are going to experience this. So hopefully the word can get out so they don't squash that child. Sometimes there might be a relative, an aunt, for example, or an uncle or somebody who's open to it, and they talk one-on-one mm-hmm. with the child and can mm-hmm. Make the child feel comfortable about it. I don't have any easy answers for that because when it's not your own child, it's hard to interfere with how someone else is raising their child and what they feel is right. The best thing to do is try to bring some light into the parents' experience and to get them aware. Dr. Chamberlain's book, Windows to the Womb, is a beautiful compilation of all kinds of research, more hardcore research than the anecdotal research we are presenting. His book, the person asking the question could take a look at that book and see if this is something that might be a doorway to the parents to start opening them up to these kinds of ideas and then to even deeper ideas.
So now this person did say that they have been asking for angels and guides to go to the child.
Mm-hmm.
Is that useful?
Yes, if they have that power to do that, of course, if they can work on a subtler level to bring comfort to the child, because the child mm-hmm. is the child having great difficulties and wanting to talk about this all the time.
Well,
that was happening.
That's I'm not getting a response about that.
Okay.
But my early childhood was very rough, and when I was, I think, about 21 or 22, I visited my grandfather on my father's side, and he said to me, your grandmother and I always thought you and your sister had a very difficult life, and we always felt sad about it. And I burst into tears, and I looked at him, and I said, if just once you had said something like that, it would have made a huge difference to me.
Mm.
So I just want to emphasize, based on what you're saying, that even one conversation where the child gets validated that their experience or their memories are real and acceptable could make a huge difference.
Yeah, that's beautiful. We have one little boy that has a mother who is quite rigid in her beliefs about this, and this little boy remembers so many things, and he actually shares them with his aunt. And he told the aunt that he chose his mother because he knew he would have the aunt. So sometimes these children, they may not get the mother they want, you know, the most ideal mother, but there's some relative there that's going to be a connection to that and support for that. So this is very good.
Yeah. So our chatter said that she does have the ability to send in angels. She says, I've been living one step here and one step on the other side all my life, and I'm in touch with angels. So so she does have that ability.
It's good not to the child will just stop talking about it. They're usually smart enough to know. Many, mm-hmm. I mean, I know people. My husband, for example, he remembered all kinds of things and was aware from a very early age. Don't talk about this. Talk about this. It's not these people won't understand it. So children are also on that level. We also have one story in our book of Kathy, who remembers her whole journey in choosing to be born here. I won't go through all those details, but the interesting part here is that she realized when her pre-birth memory was weird when she was about 8 years old, and she said she was playing with a bunch of boys in the neighborhood.
Oh, right.
And they did something mean, did something to a newcomer into the neighborhood. And she asked them directly, well, why are you doing this? Don't you remember before we came here, before when we were all connected? And these little boys stopped and looked at her, and she just assumed everybody remembered when we were part of mm-hmm. the one and we affected each other. And she thought, oh, I'm not explaining myself very well. And she said, she said to them, you know, before we were born. And mm-hmm. there was a pause and like, oh, my God, Kathy thinks she remembers being born. They started laughing at her, and she said she just felt so alone and kept her mouth shut after that. So this is mm-hmm. what happens is these memories may not go away. They may have to be quiet for a while, but at some point in life they will come out. And Kathy has shared her experience with us and is happy to know there are others out there that also have these memories. So
right.
It was
now okay. So one of the notions that is repeated in Cosmic Cradle that I think applies here and that I work with all the time as a psychotherapist is that we come here to the earth to learn. And so as a therapist, I would see the situation of a child being squashed as part of the lesson, and it might most likely would be a lesson that had been planned into that person's life. Will you talk about your understanding of that?
Yes, that's very good. These things are planned, and there are lessons, and that child is going to learn something, and the parents are going to learn something from that. So maybe this is the best way for the parents to learn it from one of their own children, and it may not happen right away, but at some point that child is going to open them up to a higher reality rather than reading it from a book. But, there's people think, everybody's got a perfect life and woe is me. And actually, I remember a joke that Dr. Phil told on his show. He was talking about dysfunctional families. He said, well, there's a story out there that says there's one functional family here in the United States, and they're hiding out and living up in the mountains of Montana, but nobody has ever seen them or met them, but we got rumors that they really do exist. So the challenges are there for all of us because the families we come into, there may not be a lot of quote-unquote functional families. So we all are here to learn certain lessons, and that's the way reality is on this physical plane. We're not living in that perfect state that people remember coming from. We say, is heaven a memory or is it really, is it real? Is it? And people are telling us, yes, I remember be in that state of oneness, like I was mentioning Kathy here, having that memory about being in that state and the little boys not having any understanding of what she was talking about. Once we become enclosed in this little physical body, our soul, our light is confined in this physical form, and we may start, becoming earthbound and forgetting who we are, forgetting that higher reality that we've come from.
Thank you for that. It's really comforting, I think. One of the things you discuss, people you discuss in your book, you mention her many times, is Dr. Gladys McGarry, who is known as the mother of living medicine. And I have friends who not only had one of their children delivered by Dr. Gladys, but also worked with her as medical professions. One is a doctor and one's a nurse. And the thing that I saw in your book and also that I know about Dr. Gladys is that she has profound respect for the souls of children being born into this world. And I wanted to just ask you, what is the benefit of having respect for souls on that level as they come into the earth?
Well, I think that a lot of the traumas and problems that we have in daily life can be traced back to our womb time experiences. And if we have mothers who are more conscious and more loving and having respect for who we really are before we exit the birth canal, we're going to have a happier world. So this is one place we can start. There's studies done in Europe, for example. There's a 30-year longitudinal study done on unwanted children. And these children, the mothers had difficult pregnancies. It wasn't the right time to have a child, whatever the circumstances were. But the children were not welcomed, were not respected. It was not a positive situation. And the high percentage of these children, way beyond what we find in the normal population, these were the ones that turned out to have all kinds of problems in the school system as children. And as they grew up, they had addictive problems, criminal tendencies. Well, it all gets traced back to that feeling of being unwanted in the womb. It was very interesting study showing. So respect for who we really are if the pregnancy is unwanted, and as you bring up Dr. Gladys McGarry, she's worked with many mothers that it wasn't the right time, or they were too young, or maybe it was a rape, or the child wasn't married, not ready to start raising a newborn baby. So she came up with this protocol, and she would advise the mother to communicate, mm-hmm. have a conversation with that unborn, and tell it what's going on, and that, you know, the time may not be right now, but maybe in a year or two, when certain conditions are fulfilled, this will be a more appropriate time to come back and have a life, and please leave, and mm-hmm. have an energetic miscarriage or a spontaneous abortion, not going to a clinic and going through that kind of trauma, but having a heart-to-heart talk. So this is something maybe not every woman is capable of doing, but we mm-hmm. have one situation in our book where we share the experience of Summer, who is pregnant with a second child, and the marriage was a little rocky, the finances weren't stable, she was wanting to complete some educational training and not really ready to bring on another child. And when she got pregnant, she had a conversation like what I'm just describing.
Right.
And she went into the backyard, closed her eyes, and sat down in quiet. And she was a very sensitive mother. And she said, I could feel the presence of this soul. And she felt a great love for this soul, a great connection to this soul. And she explained, I love you, but this isn't the right time. And she had a journal, and she wrote three conditions. Come back when the time is right, when my marriage is more stable, when we have a bigger home, when I've completed my educational program. And she wrote those three conditions. And then immediately a bumblebee came, unbelievable experience, a bumblebee came and landed on her journal and walked up and down those three wishes that she had for the future to have the child come back. And she said the next day she had a spontaneous miscarriage. A year later, when all the conditions were fulfilled, she got pregnant again. And this is a mother who today has six children, and she said each pregnancy she feels different because she's so sensitive to the incoming spirit and her, you know, whether she has morning sickness early or different mm-hmm. physical conditions, she's aware of it. She said, it was the same physical experience that I had, and she felt the soul had come back. When that child was born and started to go to, well, the child started speaking very early and telling it things that were beyond its range of knowing, even world events, things like that, that would be coming in the future. And she said the teachers in school said, the only problem you're going to have with this child is that she could get bored in school because she is so advanced. So it was as if she was a year ahead of herself. So that was an interesting kind of confirmation that it was the same soul that came
yes.
back, that she had a
yes.
certain timing, and then she was catching up when she did come back the second time. So
that's right. Maybe she was hanging around that whole year.
Listen, yeah.
we have a caller on the line who has a question for you.
Okay.
Dakey, are you there?
Yes, I am. This is a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much, both of you.
Mm.
And as you were speaking earlier about the parents who would like to suppress information about pre-birth and this kind of thing in the child, I couldn't help but think of those camps that have become well known now for individuals who are gay or homosexual, transgender, that kind of thing. And parents used to send, children who had those tendencies to these camps so that they could be deprogrammed or healed or, you know, like a alcoholic recovery or something. And I thought, wow, is it so prevalent now that we have this experience of life before life and the more soul journey kind of thing that the culture is giving this kickback of trying to suppress it. I mean, I know it's a terrible thing to suppress this, but I couldn't help but also feel that balance that says it's coming above the horizon. It's now being seen, and even a resistance to it, when the resistance is properly dealt with and respectfully dealt with, is a good thing. So I just wanted to make that comment that balances out the feeling of bottoming that comes when we see a soul being suppressed, when they know so much. And I also just want to add one thing, and then I'll let you answer. But I was wondering, because I've loved the experience of learning about it myself, if you have had any experience with the hypnosis process that speaks about life between lives, and also the perspective it lends to us, the very practical perspective of what if we viewed our life not as per what our next career will be or how to survive and pay the rent, but according to the principles that come through from the work you do and from the hypnosis life between life, that what's the soul's intent in this lifetime and how do we align with the soul's, whether we remember our pre-birth or not. These are really important things to get us on target for the transformational energies upon us. So that was it. Thank you so much for what you're speaking of here.
Thank you.
Wow, those were lots of questions to come in at the end of the program, so I don't think we're going to be able to cover all that territory.
All
right. We are familiar with the work done by Dr. Michael Newton. You just mentioned that in his wonderful books he's written about the destiny of souls, and he has hypnotized and has trained others to do this work, to go into the past of each person and to find out this pre-birth state. We are finding similar information. The only difference, as I may have pointed out in the beginning of the show, I'm not sure we covered that, is we are looking for people who have been born with the natural memories, but we are finding similar things in about our true nature as spiritual beings, and that we have this pre-birth stage before we come in here, and that we have planned to learn certain lessons, as difficult as they may be. We sometimes choose very difficult situations, and we have found people that were given choices and chose the most difficult life. Why would they do that? Because they were going to gain the most from that. So that's hard to believe, but sometimes people can't believe that we would choose something difficult. But when we're in a higher consciousness before we incarnate, we are seeing things from an altogether different perspective than when we come in as humans.
And in your book, too, Elizabeth, I just wanted to, you have story after story after story where the soul picked the harder life in order to do more learning.
Yes. The beautiful validated story of Rennie, who recalls standing in an assembly of souls and looking down at Earth, and his guide is giving him a choice of three sets of parents, couple number one, number two, number three. They're all in the act of physical procreation. He sees bedroom scenes. He sees all the details. And the first two couples are in bedroom scenes. The second couple is in a car, a young couple driving along a country road, and he sees what happens. They pull off the side of the road, and the guide says, if you're born to this couple, life is going to be very difficult. It'll be hard to pass God's test. He said, but won't my reward be the greatest? And so this is the conversation they were having, and he was insistent, and that's the life he chose. When he was 25 years old, he asked his parents, where was I conceived? They said, we can't remember that. He said, what if I supply the details? Can you confirm them? They confirmed everything he remembered. We have a beautiful story about Rennie's memories in our book. So he chose a very difficult path. Some of his children died at an early age. He had three marriages. The first two wives passed away due to serious illnesses. He had many tragic events in the military. He was a military intelligence officer. And this fellow never shared these memories with most people, maybe a couple people in his whole life. And when he found out about our research, he came forward and said, I have to let people know about this. So it's a beautiful story of choosing a difficult path. And part of the question that came up later about choosing our gender, and there's so much to say about that question. Also, we have one individual who remembers being a woman in past lives, many times a woman, and when he came back into his incarnation in this life, he had memories of that, dreams about that, actually of dying as an old woman, and he had some difficulties in this life adjusting to being a male. And so, but it did happen. But sometimes these questions about this could be related to being a female in a past life for many, many times, and they just love that and they want to be that again, but they came into a male body. What do they do now? So it's very interesting. Yes, we have to look deeper than the surface issues of these things. The surface issues are just creating more problems.
Right, right. Well, I did the opposite. I've had many incarnations as a male.
Mm-hmm.
I've had to learn to be very more receptive and focus more on loving rather than what, I mean, the one place where I still hold on to my maleness is shopping. I really dislike shopping. I make a list. I go get what I want, and I come home.
Well, that sounds like a good plan, though. Maybe that's it. You're getting balanced, and you know, it sounds very practical.
Right. So I do want to tell you, Elizabeth, that we have had two programs on Indigo Children in recent months. So we are. Doing what we can to help people come into acquaintance with these powerful souls that are coming to the earth now, the ones that are difficult to deal with many times, but also who've come to guide us through this transformation. So I just wanted you to know we're on that topic because you brought that up. Yeah. Well, I could talk with you for hours and hours and hours. This has really been wonderful. And I want to say that Cosmic Cradle is an amazing bringing together of information that supports the reality of reincarnation. And I want to thank you for your years and years of attention on this topic and for the hard work it must have taken to put this book together so that we can share in your wealth. So thank you for writing.
Thank you, and it's a joy. It's a passion. I'm like a cosmic explorer, finding out, you know, what do people remember? How far back does it go? And how telepathic are the babies in the womb? And even before they're conceived, it's just exploring who we as humans really are at our deepest core, and just bringing out this hidden side of who we are, and opening people up to the great possibilities that exist there.
So wonderful. Let me remind people that your book is called Cosmic Cradle and your website is cosmiccradle.com. And yes, there are two C's in the middle. I had to figure that out too, Cosmic Cradle. The book is available on Amazon, is that right, Elizabeth?
It's available worldwide. It's available in paperback, Amazon. You can find it. Have your local bookstore order it if you don't want to go online. It's available in Kindle version and Nook version. And we have a free chapter on the website. They can download the chapter about I Was in Your Tummy Twice. They can download that chapter. We also have a very active Facebook page. I like to work in Photoshop and create all kinds of illustrations for the stories of all these different memories and pre-birth communication. So there's a lot of fun and activity and interaction happening on our Facebook page. So please come in and take a look at that also.
And that's Cosmic Cradle also. They can look up.
It's Cosmic Cradle, Spiritual Dimensions of Life Before Birth. Or that's what it is on Facebook. That's the full.
Okay.
It's the full title of the book.
The full title of the book. Okay.
Correct.
Well, thank you so much for giving us your time and your wealth of information and your love for this topic. It's been just a delight to have you on Full Power Living.
Thank you for your acceptance and support. It's wonderful to connect with you and to share this with the folks that are connected to your program. We really appreciate having the opportunity.
Good. We're a soul tribe, and we're traveling together.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Next week, listen to Full Power Living when I talk with Carla McLaren, who's author of The Language of Emotions. I look forward to having you with us. That's next Thursday, June 18th, 9 a.m. Pacific time, noon Eastern. Thanks for listening to Full Power Living. Robin Johnston of Fresh Talk Media has been our producer today, so thank you so much, Robin. For now, I'm Eileen Dillon, your host, reminding you to pay attention not to what you want to overcome, but to what you want to become.
You're listening to Full Power Living with Eileen Dillon.